I wonder if there is something that you have been waiting for your whole life. Something that once seen, you might feel so free that you could sing to God. Now you are dismissing your servant in peace. What was it that Simeon saw in that baby? Have you ever had a moment like this, when you knew that the world would be all right because you saw something that others had not yet realized? This Sunday, we've gone back in time a little bit. Last week, we heard the story of Jesus as an adult calling his first disciples. But this week, we are celebrating the Feast of the Presentation. This is an annual celebration, always falling on February 2nd, which happens to fall on a Sunday this year, hence the time mismatch. And while this might induce a little bit of whiplash, I think it is also a very important reminder. God's work does not move linearly. Through Advent and Christmas, we waited, but our time of waiting is never complete, never only assigned just to Advent. The beginning of the story is never just in one place when God's time is concerned. And anytime we think that we are at the middle of the story or the end of the story, or that our period of waiting has ended, we are reminded that we are still, always, actively waiting for God's transformative work in this world. In this story, from the Gospel of Luke, Mary and Joseph go to the temple to do what every young couple will do at the birth of their first son, offer a sacrifice and dedicate him to God. It is something that they will only do once in their lives, but it is an event that is expected in the rhythm of life. Mary will share this event with her sisters and her aunts and her cousins and her nieces. But yet, in the course of this ordinary action, extraordinary events occur. When they come to the temple, two devout elders approach them. Simeon and Anna both have extraordinary messages about who Jesus is and what he will become. They have been waiting their whole lives for this. This is Luke's version of the Epiphany. In Luke, there is no parade of wealthy magi who get an audience with the king and then arrive with gold and frankincense and myrrh. Aside from the shepherds, the people who first recognize who Jesus is and pay homage to him are elderly, devoted people. These people are exceptional in their faith, but not that much different from the rest of us. It is easy to see how Simeon and Anna might be like our own surrogate grandparents in our own faith communities. Luke is especially concerned with the epiphanies of normal people, of the ordinary being a carrier for the extraordinary. To this day, Simeon's song of praise is still used at the close of Compline and has been sung by monks and nuns and faithful people at the close of the day for 2,000 years. These are the words of someone who has finally received the fruit of a promise, waited on for an entire lifetime. It is powerful for us to say his words also, reaching deep into our cultural memory to relive hope realized, salvation experienced, and God known. But there is a darker side to Simeon's message. A strange oracle for Mary alone that follows the song. Simeon's words for Mary foreshadow what will become of her, of Jesus, the disciples, and the early Christian community. Jesus' work will be divisive and difficult, and salvation will not come about as they expect it to. He is destined for the rising and falling of many in Israel, a sign that is to be opposed. It's that final line, though, that sticks with me. A sword will pierce your own soul, too. I think that all parents know, to some extent, what that statement means. To have a child is to unleash your heart into this world, to let it walk around on its own, and then to let it go be in its life. Parents are asked to give life to their children, to care for them, to help them grow up safely and kindly and to be themselves. but ultimately we give them birth in order to set them free into their own lives. We cannot control the choices they make or the paths to which they are called. It is wonderful, it is joyful, and it is painful to let them become who they are. Mary will know well, by the time her son is grown, how amazing and dangerous releasing him into his own vocation will become. Sometimes she is able to do this, and sometimes she is not, just like the rest of us. She is an ordinary mother in extraordinary circumstances. She asks him later to begin his work at the wedding in Cana, but when he begins to attract the attention of the authorities, she tries in the Gospel of Mark to come and protect him, to rein him in, but he does not oblige. She tries to protect him, but he has his own call, his own vocation, and even for his own mother, he cannot rest. In the end, her process of loving him and letting him go will lead her to the foot of the cross, where she is weeping, but also to that upper room where he appears to them, resurrected, where she may finally see, after all the angels and the oracles and the miracles and the healing, where she may see what God is doing through her son. But she cannot get there without accepting that she cannot protect him from this, without that sword in her heart. For all of us, to love is to accept the reality of brokenness, to invite heartbreak into our lives. Our children have their own destiny. The beloved is their own person. And because we cannot love perfectly, to love at all is to love imperfectly. To love at all is to face loss at some point. With the joy comes the pain. And this would be cruel and full of despair if it was not the exact place where God chose to go. In the letter to the Hebrews, we are told that in Jesus, God came to be among us as a brother, sharing in our flesh and our blood, to suffer as we suffered, to be as we are. To love is to accept the reality of brokenness, yes. But the good news is that God has chosen to be in that with us, to show us the way, not away from pain, but through pain, not free from vulnerability and heartbreak, but towards salvation from within vulnerability and heartbreak. For that is the salvation that Simeon has seen. He has not seen the healings or the miracles, the work of the cross, nor even the resurrection, but the presence of God in an infant, the presence of God in flesh and blood, weak and vulnerable as an unspeaking child. And through that ordinary baby, God has made an extraordinary promise that from within our own fragile realities, he will transform what love is, what power is, what it means to be human, and to set us all free from the tyranny of fear. And if that is not something that is worth waiting for, I don't know what is. So we too can sing Simeon's song because we too have seen this moment. Today we're going to end the sermon a little bit differently than usual, by singing rather than holding our silence. We can hold a silence after the song, but at this moment I'd like to invite you to join me in singing the song that Simeon sang. You can find it at number 499 in your hymnal. Please join me.